Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good morning. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
Morning, Perry. How are you doing
good
today?
Good morning there, Don. Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.
This is a live call-in radio. It's in the Investor Resources program, and we talk about the stock market, economy, issues related to portfolio construction. We do a monthly stock market update seminar, which you can register for on our website at irradio.com, where we take Q&A at the end of every presentation. And we take Q&A every day when we are here live on the radio. And that magic phone number is 800-465-8770. 800-465-8770. Perry, I'm going to start with something that's absolutely unrelated to our normal topic.
Because that sounds like fun. What's up?
Well, you know, when we're dealing with the market, there's so much bad news and has been all year. It's really, really encouraging to find something that is just plain uplifting. Now, I wish I knew when American Ninja Warrior was coming to Tacoma, because they do some of their stuff in the Tacoma Dome.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. All right.
And last night's show, I mean, it's always a qualifying event. I mean, it's not the big event, which goes on in Las Vegas, where if you qualify for that final event and make it to the top of the tower, it's worth $1 million. So people are highly motivated. But last night's show was not a qualifier. It was family American Ninja Warriors. These were family members, some of whom have actually competed previously, but many of whom had never been on an America Ninja stage. And it was just uplifting to see the kind of family support and fellowship and the backup they had from friends, relatives, and people who trained at gyms with Ninja Warriors. I mean, we were laughing, but to see the family cooperation is just something that doesn't hit the news very often. And to see a whole program that was focused around, look at these families working together, goals together, supporting each other. And it was a relay deal. Each family member would take two pieces of the run. And, you know, just like a relay on a racetrack, you had to touch the next person's hand. So even if you fell, I mean, actually, if you fell in the water, you didn't have to make contact. The next person just got to run. But even a few of the people who had previously competed successfully didn't make it all the way through. And you're sitting there, you're cheering them on, and you're saying, what great unity these people, these families represent as hope for our country, because I think they really are the core of our social structure, which there's a lot of efforts trying to undermine it.
Families are very important. When you were talking about that, you know, we have in our family, we have pretty much a yearly like family, you know, ninja warrior gathering, and it's usually you know, on Thanksgiving Day, around the Thanksgiving table, and that's when the real competition starts for who's getting what when, you know. So that's as close as we get to ninja competition.
Well, there was one family there that had, with the cousins and all, 53 people. And there, Linda said, that looks like Perry's family.
there we go. That sounds right. Yeah.
It's up in that category anyway.
That's right.
Well, anyway, that was it gave a really uplifting end to the day last
sounds
night
fun.
See that as a focus. And anyway, even during the tryouts and the normal American Ninja contest, what you see is people who are motivated, who are taking care of themselves and their family. I mean, one of the men who competed with his two daughters, this was his last run because he's been competing with Parkinson. I mean, and he knew he wasn't going to be able to do another year. And so the video they did of his family and his workout and all giving his background and some of his prior tries. I mean, it's just right. Heartwarming to see this kind of support for wholesome families in our country. You look at the news and you see what goes on in these blue states that are just ignoring crime, and you're thinking that's what this world is now, and it isn't. It is part of it, and it's an unfortunate part. But what we have witnessed this season on American Ninja Family is an uplifting program that just supports people's positive outlook on life and their positive effort to make themselves better, in this case, that particularly at something that requires physical discipline, physical and mental discipline. So,
yep.
Anyway, one of the things that we have not had a lot of discipline about this year is stock market results. This is the worst year ever, and there has been virtually no place to hide. We're down 8 months so far this year, and most investors, if they're using a website or a financial advisor, have a balanced plan between stocks and bonds. Bonds are supposed to be the safety valve. And yet this is the worst 8 month stretch to a start of a year for a 60-40 portfolio all the way back to 1976 when the aggregate bond index was created. It is a discouraging event because 1 year ago, the rate on the 10-year treasury was 1.3. Today it's 3.3. And it's actually been a tick higher than that. The last time we had that much of an increase in the 10-year treasury rate was January of 2000. The final quarter of the 3-year tech bubble.
Right.
Ouch.
Blow off top. Yeah, that was the beginning of the end for the tech bubble. And I think this year can be seen as a cautionary tale for, you know, government intervention in the economy, thinking about, you know, all the things that have happened over the years in the market, and that this year is the worst start after we closed the economies of the world, you know, on purpose. And probably a lot of it was unnecessary. And then this is the aftermath of that. And so this is not an economic event. This is an external shock to the market that threw everything off so badly. You know, we talked a little bit last week about how things were so disconnected and nothing that you look at metric wise in the market is reading correctly because it's all jumbled. Because we changed those relationships so much, the correlations in the market, by artificially closing everything and then reopening it like I was just going to open again without trouble, which of course it didn't, and this is where we are now. So it's a pretty clear sign of what happens when the government intervenes in a free market system and says, well, we're not going to be free market for a little while here, and then try to turn it back on. It's not going to work well.
Well, the government wants to control more than you think. I mean, even here in the United States, sure. There are plenty of attempts to try to undermine the Constitution. But with regard to the economy, this last week we've had a rally in stocks for several days, a pretty strong one for a few days. But the macro conditions remain unchanged. Central banks, like that's the Fed, the European Central Bank, Bank of Japan, Bank of Canada, you know, the banks that run the financial lending environment for their countries, they are still aggressively tightening monetary conditions because they're still trying to bring inflation under control. And the global economy, if we look at the purchasing managers index around the world, more than half of the countries globally that have a PMI are in recession territory. They're below 50. So we globally, the economy's weakening and entering a recession, which partly explains lower energy prices on top of what Mr. Biden is doing, trying to drain the strategic petroleum reserve on the premise that there are no bad actors in the world and we live in a very, very safe environment. We could argue about that.
Yeah, it's tough to hold that point of view seriously, I think.
So the ECB raised their rate this last week, and they raised it by 75 basis points. That's 0.75%, which is the first time that the European Central Bank's key 10-year rate has been above zero since 2011. It's been 10 years they've been operating with negative interest rates, trying to keep their country afloat.
And we talk about the Fed here in our country being, you know, behind the curve and not on top of, and not getting rates up to where they should be soon enough. And here they're finally getting above zero, and their inflation's a little worse than ours in the EU. So, you know, it's hard to believe they're taking it seriously, but, you know, they're saying they're gonna continue on that path, just like the Fed has said. It's just gonna be, time will tell whether that actually, if they follow through or not, and that's gonna be necessary to bring inflation under control.
Well, let's talk about the Fed when we come back from this break.
Okay, let's go ahead, get out of here. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have our next market update on the calendar. That is scheduled for Saturday, October 1st at 9 o'clock in the morning. You can register for that by going to iriradio.com. That's iriradio.com. Just head over to the webinar page. Give the registration link a click. You'll get an email back with a link in it. And on October 1st, you just click that link and you will be live online with us. You'll be able to see the charts that we talk about all the time, let you know, so you can kind of see what's going on, get some clarity on the market. We cover the economy. We cover what's going on in the market. We cover what we're doing with client portfolios. And then we always have plenty of time for your questions. We get great questions from everybody who attends the webinar. And we always take enough time to get them all answered. So if you have questions about the market, the economy in general, or even specific securities that you're thinking about buying or something you're thinking about selling and you'd like a second opinion, it's a great time to get it and get some feedback on what's going on. So again, you can register for that at iriradio.com. If you'd like to talk to us this morning, we'd love to talk to you about investing in the economy. Give us a call at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Live and local, you're listening to Investor Resources. This is your opportunity to call in and have your questions answered. The lines are open at 1-800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Or email your question to help at iriradio.com. Don and Perry will be right back.
Well, that is take it higher, and that's what everybody wants to see in the market. They want things to go higher, and that's what happened the last couple of days of this week. And in order to justify where the market stopped, it stopped within $1. The S&P 500 stopped within $1 of the high end of a trading range based on current S&P 500 earnings. So the trading range, it's a price earnings determined range. So typically somewhere between 16 and 18 times earnings. That's kind of the bouncy, oh, we're happy, oh, no, we're not. Yes, we are. No, we're not kind of range. It is the epitome of a bipolar stock market trading environment. And that high range is just $1 above where we stopped on Friday. So Monday's going to be really interesting to see whether we push on through or not, or we come back down to the lower end where value is stronger. But you mentioned, Perry, just before we went to break, that ECB and the Fed are both taking a stand that we're serious about inflation. We're going to take this fight all the way.
Ignore our past. Yeah, we're for real this time, right?
Chairman Powell spoke at the Cato Institute this last Wednesday, and quoting him a couple of times, "We need to act now forthrightly, strongly, as we have been doing, and we have to keep at it until the job is done." And another one, "My colleagues and I are strongly committed to this. We will keep at it until the job is done." Sounds a little Churchillian, doesn't it?
Just a bit.
We are not going to quit anytime soon. So the S&P earnings are about 226. And Morgan Stanley this last week, instead of assuming earnings are going to go up next year, have cut their earnings expectation. And with those new numbers, the S&P 500 should be trading between 5 and 10% lower as long as there is no recession and there's no global problems. Then if that happens, if earnings come in lower because of a recession, and we've got global slowdown because of big problems in China where their economy is really struggling to stay afloat, then the low trading range ends up in the 2000s someplace, depending on what you think earnings are going to level out at. And that is the reason why it's a little premature to take the foot off the brake and put it pedal to the metal to go forward, because this does not look like it's the turning point for the next bull market. Anyway, we have Kent on the phone from Kent. He was a recent caller again. So he's got a question about what's going on in our portfolios. So, Kent, you're live with Don and Perry.
Good morning, gentlemen. Hey, actually, first of all, I want to talk about something called the death and golden crosses in charting. And I understand that, you know, you analyze many, many, many different things. But I was just wondering, does that have any value in charting for short-term movements in an ETF, for example? And I compare that something to, like, the Treasury. When the yield curve inverts, you know, typically they say a recession is a good probability that could follow. And so I was just wondering, is there any value to even think about looking at some of these death and golden cross charting incidences on a ETF?
Well, it doesn't matter whether it's an ETF or an individual stock. I mean, the chart's a chart. It doesn't matter whether you're looking at a very short time frame or a longer time frame on the chart. It's still a cross of trend lines. And I've read some academic work that basically says they're interesting, but there's really no strong correlation unless you have if you're a buy and hold kind of investor. Probably a little more impactive as far as long-term trends concerned, but not in the short term, which your question implies. And with regard to the inversion, the curve inversion on rates, again, it implies a recession risk is now higher than, probably higher than 50-50 now, but whether or not it starts 6 months or 12 months out is not definable by that inversion. So it's interesting because it pays attention to the general risk environment that you're in, which should you should be ready to adapt to. But it's not generally a trading signal for most investors. But you're paying attention. That's interesting.
Yeah, well, the thing is, too, is that I guess based on what you're saying, Don, is that there isn't any whether it's a 50 versus 200 day or any other metrics you want to use, it doesn't make much difference in terms of value for predicting short term movements in a security. It doesn't make any difference what you choose.
It's a precursor to a potential trend change, as opposed to a trade signal.
Okay.
So if the 50 crosses below the...
I think it's important to remember that any metric like that, a death cross or even like above or below the 200-day average, any of those, all of those metrics are long-term averages. And you need to see them as a long-term average. It doesn't really have much bearing on what's going to happen this time, because sometimes it's accurate and sometimes it's not. And even if it's accurate more times than not, that doesn't mean it's going to be accurate this time. So it's still just an average of what has happened in the past. And so it can be interesting. It can be an indicator that you watch to get your pulse on maybe the mood of the market. But it's important, I think, not to blindly invest on it, because you don't know what's going to happen this time. And that's the only thing that's important.
Yeah, I'm certainly not a chartaholic, but it was just interesting in reading about different concepts and just trying to get a little bit better, a little bit more knowledge about investments in general. So that's why I brought the question up. Quickly, the second one is that, could you comment on what the cash position is currently in your dynamic portfolio?
It's 50-50.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Yeah. Okay. All right, gentlemen, as always, thank you so much for your program. It's really great. Thanks a lot.
Well, we're glad to have you out there, Kent, and that opens up a phone line, 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. So he mentioned the 50 and the 200, and I was just looking at the S&P 500 chart, and it broke above the 50 on the 30th of August, just a couple weeks ago, and it quickly reversed right back down below it the next day.
Correct.
And Friday, it closed above it.
Popped up again. Yep.
Yeah, but it's a long way from the 200. So there, as you mentioned, these are relatively slower moving averages, and they can alert you to a change in conditions, but they're generally not trading signals.
Yep, that's a good way to see it.
So one of the things that individual investors often do is they're looking for something that's simple. I just want an on-off switch, kind of like my light switch. When it's dark and I want light, I turn it up. When it's off, when I want to go to sleep, I turn it off. So when I'm in the portfolio, I want to know something that tells me when I can be aggressive and when I should be defensive. And many people and many advisors over the years have learned to rely upon Morningstar publications and their five-star rating. And if we go back into the early 2000s, there were a series of articles in the financial press where Dr. Callahan with the Icon Funds Management, well, he actually started Icon Funds back in the late 90s, early 2000s. Anyway, in the early 2000s, he had a series of very critical articles about Morningstar's methodology. And of course, they responded saying, no, we know what we're doing. Well, that's created ongoing examination about, do star ratings actually carry any water? Mm-hmm. And the recent audit, you pulled this article. I don't remember who did the audit. It just says audit report.
Wall Street Journal.
The Wall Street Journal did the audit.
The Wall Street Journal did one. And then, of course, Morningstar did their own. Yeah.
So I'm going to, I'd like to do that. The IRS says, we want to audit your return. You say, don't worry about it. I'll take care. I'll do the audit and I'll send it to you. How's that?
I got it. Don't worry. Yeah. That'd be a beautiful thing. Yeah.
So the Wall Street Journal did this audit on the five-star system to find out whether it was effective for predictive power. And what it found is that it's marginal in bull markets, and it's not good in bear markets.
Correct.
So
correct.
As much as we'd like to have an on-off switch, Morningstar's selling their subscription data. They sell it to institutions. They sell it to broker-dealers. They sell it to investment advisors. Financial advisors buy it directly themselves to get extra charting.
They've got a great brand. They've been around for a long, long time, and especially earlier when the mutual fund market was the largest individual investing part of the market. they made a lot of hay then. You know, they really got a lot of traction. But that entire time, like I said, Don, this is not the first time, even, you know, previous to this, we've seen those reports come out that say, hey, that Morningstar rating, star rating is not what it's cracked up to be. And in fact, if you'll go invest in one-star funds instead of the five-star funds in the next 3 to 5 year period, you're going to be better off investing in the one-star funds. So Morningstar had to come out and protect their brand, which is what they're doing. But I think that's a good thing to notice, because we tell everyone all the time, if Wall Street or a company like Morningstar, who lives off of Wall Street, comes out with a product or anything, it's a sales pitch. They are trying to get you to buy something. That's what they're doing. And, you know, Morningstar had to come out and you know, do their own audit to say, well, all you people saying that we're not so great are wrong. We really are really great. And, you know, even they couldn't come up with, they're saying, well, yeah, in a bull market, we're doing pretty well, but bear market, now we need to work on our algorithm a little more. And so even they're saying, yeah, maybe not as great as we say it is.
Well, and they end up with what's referred to as a hindsight bias, because sure, of the go. 4 and 5 star funds, 10% of them don't even trade anymore. I mean, they've closed down. So you bought a 4 or 5 star fund based on Morningstar, and in the next 5 years, you get a letter saying, we're not operating anymore. Here comes your check. You know, that wasn't yep. what you expected based on the ranking. And what you just said about buying the inverse one star funds over a 5 year period, they actually average a 2 star rating. I mean, they do better than you would expect being at the bottom of the heap. Yeah.
Well, being in the prediction business, as we outline over and over again, it's very difficult. It's virtually impossible. And that's what they're living on. And they sell a lot of subscriptions to companies, and even companies that don't use their services, they want to still advertise their star rating for their funds because they are so popular. So it's a very strong brand, and it's just important to look at other things besides that star rating before you go and invest, because there could be some other things, some other factors going on that don't bear the same rating as Morningstar pulls out. So it's, again, never use a single metric to do everything that you invest by. It's
not to denigrate them, but they do provide valuable information about funds, the statistical
data.
The basic
yep.
portfolio. It's an easy place, if you have the subscription, to go get a summary look of something that you may be considering. It's not that it's not available elsewhere, but they do have it consolidated for an easy place
packaged
to
well
reference.
And easily available. Yep, absolutely. All right, we are at the bottom of the hour here, Don. We should probably get out of here for a break. I'd like to remind everyone that we have a weekly email newsletter, The Week in Review. And if you would like to start receiving that, you need to send us an email. Send that to help@iriradio.com. That's help@iriradio.com. Just put Week in Review in the subject line, and then we need your first and last name in the body of the email. We'll get you signed up for that, and you'll receive that on Monday. They go out most Mondays. It's a good look at what's gone on this week in the financial world, and it's a pretty good filter to let you know what's important and what's just noise out there, because there's a lot more noise than there is signal most of the time. Again, send that email to help@iriradio.com. If you'd like to get on the radio this morning and ask us a question, give us a call at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. You are listening to Investor Resources here on AM 770 KTTH. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Well, if you've listened to us any length of time, you've heard that before, and we keep talking about that. It is leadership that, leadership leads. That's where the strength is in the market, and it does change, which is part of the problem with a balanced portfolio based on modern portfolio theory, because it eventually will make minor adaptive tweaks in the portfolio, but they're slow to get done because it's based on very long-term averages, assuming that everyone has a very long-term horizon. And if you right. don't, then they just sell you more bonds for safety purposes into a terrible bear market in bonds. Anyway, this is Investor Resources live call-in ready. You want to talk to us, it's 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. So one of the reasons that inflation is waning and the market is responding positively for a few days, breaking a three-week downtrend, is because energy prices in the United States specifically, but global oil prices have been falling. Now, part of that is because demand destruction. People are looking at the gas pump and saying, I'm not going to pay $5 or $6 for gasoline. I've got to buy groceries for, you know, which one, you know, am I going to do? I've got to put my kids back in school. Look at the cost of school supplies, backpacks. I mean, this is creating a lack of incentive to continue driving your car. Doesn't matter whether it's EV, electric, or gas-powered or diesel, it's all more expensive. Now, one of the things that was supposed to happen with the sanctions against Russia was that they wouldn't be selling oil on the open market and they would be penalized economically and have to bail on the war because that's expensive. Hasn't happened that way. They are raking in more money now than they were before the Ukraine war started, because not everybody in the world likes the United States, as a matter of fact. And they are saying, hey, we can buy cheap Russian oil. So they're buying a lot of it. Prices have come down because of slowing economies. So the G7, you know, that's our major friends, they announced they are going to put price caps on Russian oil so that Mr. Putin cannot get as much money. And he's, you know, I'm just kind of imagining him saying, well, that's an interesting move, as in a chess game. I'll just turn off the Nord Stream pipeline to Europe. Let's see what they do if they don't get natural gas. So the pipeline 2 had a pump that needed maintenance work. So we're going to turn it off for, turn it off for 3 days. Oh, I'm so sorry, but the problem's bigger than we thought it was going to be. It kind of reminds me of occasionally taking my car in and saying, you know, this thump thump doesn't sound right. And they listen to it and they say, well, you know, that doesn't sound like a big deal until you get the phone call and say, you know what we found? That's kind of what Mr. Putin is doing with the EC, with the euro, is saying, you know, that pump that we were going to get back up and running, well, it's just going to take a lot longer. And in the Nord Stream 1, he's cut that supply down to about 20% of normal. It's not that he has cut it off, but he's cut it way back. And all of a sudden, I don't remember the guy who was the UN ambassador for Germany, but when President Trump spoke and said, you Europeans are making a big mistake, you are going to be blackmailed by Russia over your dependence on fuel, and the German ambassador snickered out loud. I don't think he's laughing anymore.
No, he's probably looking for another place of employment right now.
So Russia's using the natural gas line to punish Europe, and OPEC turns around and says to Mr. Biden, and with the G7's announcement saying, you're going to put a cap on oil? We're going to cut production. Okay, this is the world of cooperation, right?
Yeah. Right.
You want to lower prices, and OPEC wants a price that's pretty close to 100, and we're just under 90 right now. If we go back a couple of months to May, the Brent oil trading on the London Exchange was 115. It looked like it was
going
to 150.
OPEC wants no precedent for anyone else setting an oil price but them. So when the G7 comes out and says, well, we're going to set the oil price for Russia, that sends shivers down OPEC's back. They're like, no, that's us. We set prices, not you. And so everyone's at odds, like you said, Don. There's not a lot of cooperation going on right here, right now.
But what's going to happen to price oil? We don't know. But right now, yeah, we don't own any oil anymore. I mean, we had it in our portfolio. When these things started to fall apart, we took it out. I mean, it was no longer a leading asset class. So it came out of the portfolios. And would we like to have it in there? We think that the demand cycle, well, actually, the supply problem is pretty critical. It's just that it's being manipulated right now on political grounds. And it's really hard to trade against politics. You just don't know when they're going to flip a switch again.
Very true. But in fact, that's an old, maxim in investing. It's like, never mix politics with your investing. And right now, political stances around the world may have never had more influence over what's going on in the markets than they do right now, with energy and interest rates, battling inflation everywhere. The government intervention, again, is really high on the list of things that are pushing the market around. And that makes it really tough to get a real handle on what's going on out there. Doesn't make our job easier, I tell you that much.
That's a great transition into the subject of Japan.
You're welcome.
Because Japan has been manipulating their currency to hide the impact of inflation for decades. Now, over the years, we've talked about their demographic problem. I mean, they are losing population, and they are not an immigrant friendly culture. And unlike the United States, you can't just walk across the border to get in there. They have a pretty good sized barrier that they didn't have to pay for.
The moat's pretty strong, yes.
That's true. They have a lot more water than the Rio Grande.
Yep.
So the Japanese have barely experienced inflation since the early 1990s, but October 1 is going to be, as Churchill would have said, I did say, a day of infamy.
Oh, boy.
Because on that day, the night before, grocery store workers are going to be working all night long to change the prices on more than 6,000 daily food items, which are going to increase overnight by roughly 48%. That's 48% overnight. They're going to go in to buy their tea or whatever they're going to buy, and it's going to be a shocker. And it'll be interesting to see if the prime minister is able to hold on to his job, if the population
rebuilds. Huge shock. Like you said, Don, they've just been, it's not that prices haven't been going up or that Japan has been not affected by inflation. They have. They just have not allowed it to change prices. They've been artificially keeping the prices low. The supermarket industry has been eating the losses. And finally, it's like, well, we have to raise prices or we're all going to go out of business. But they don't do anything individually in Japan. They all had to get together and agree. That's why there's a date. It's like October 1st is when it's going to happen. And at the end of September, they're going to go in there one night, and the next morning, prices are going to be significantly higher. And there's going to be some shocked people when they walk into the grocery store the next time, starting in October.
So that's an economy that has defined deflation for the rest of the mm-hmm. world. And as of next month, that story has died. I mean, they are welcome to the real world of inflationary pressures, lack of supply, and there is a lack of supply. The drought is not just the United States, but we've got a drought in Europe. We have a drought in Asia. Food crops, feed corn, which feeds beef and pork and poultry, and is important around the world. You've got rice that's important in Asia. All of these crops are suffering from the drought, and Japan has just simply been hiding those costs. Either the companies were absorbing the cost, or the government was manipulating the currency to offset some of the pressure. And that's going to be an eye opener.
It's going to be a rude awakening, and they've been living on the on the belief that, you know, Japan is a rich country. They have a strong economy. Supplying food to everyone is not something that was ever an issue. In fact, their attitude was, well, we can get whatever we want. We'll just buy it. We can buy whatever we want to feed ourselves. And all of the sudden, it's going to become, well, yeah, you can still buy it, but it's going to be significantly more expensive. And boy, there's going to be some fallout from people that just don't understand the economics of what's going on, and that, you know, Japan's not immune. It's going to show up there too, and it's going to show up October 1st. They even know when, so that's going to be an exciting day. We should go ahead get our last break of the morning in here. If you'd like to see our next market update, that's scheduled for Wednesday. That's scheduled for Saturday. They're always on Saturdays. Saturday, October 1st. At 9 a.m. You can register for that by going to IRIradio.com. That's IRIradio.com. It's a really good time to get some clarity on what's going on out there, to the best that we can see it. We cover the economy, we cover markets globally, and we cover what we're doing with our portfolios, with our clients, and we have plenty of time to get to any questions you have about the economy or individual securities. Again, you can register for that by going to IRIradio.com. We have a full segment left here, plenty of time to get your call on the board. If you'd like to talk to us, give us a call, 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run.
You know, that's really an important part of running a portfolio is having, well, and stop losses. That was kind of the subject that Kent in the first segment was referring to.
Alluding to, sure.
Is the death cross or the golden cross, are they trade signals? And they really aren't. They are trend signals, that's true. But when it comes to the portfolio, we use this bump music as a reminder that there are times to be in and times to be out of the market. This year has been much more volatile than any year since, I'd say at least since 2000. There was a lot of back and forth in 2000, but even it had periods that were a lot more stable than we have had this year.
You can call this market lots of things. Stable isn't one of them, right?
That is not one of them. That's correct. But in reference to Japan, I mean, it's been identified as a deflationary, demographic, dying country right. Since 1989. And it's a function of their low birth rate after World War II. And you can't, it's really hard to reverse that. We're going through that kind of change now. Our birth rate is rapidly falling below the 2.1 replacement rate, which is required to maintain a stable population. But what's happening around the world is when investors are looking at the rising dollar is bad for international investing. And so investors who are paying attention to that have been abandoning emerging markets. They've been abandoning the EFA, Europe, Asia, and the Far East, the developed markets, which would include Germany, England, France, Japan. Those are all part of the developed index. And they're, where do they put in the money? Well, normally it probably go into treasuries, but they're losing money. The safest bond in the world is losing money. I mean, it's down at the 20-year treasury's down 20% for the year. Well, I don't want to buy that. I mean, is that safe? Well, it depends on your perspective, I guess. Where are they putting the money? Well, they're part of that money is responsible for this recent uptick in the market. It's got to go someplace. And so a lot of them are looking to say, hey, the market, buy the dip, right? Buy the dip. I've been told for 20 years to buy
so
the dip.
Often. Yep.
And right now, this looks like a pretty big dip. So I'm going to buy that dip without regard to what I mentioned in the first segment, that from an S&P earnings standpoint, the market closed within $1 of what should be the higher limit under current earnings for the S&P. And if earnings come in lower, because inventories have surged and not been sold since COVID, that inventory is going to be sold at a big discount. If it doesn't sell at a 20% discount, it'll go at a 30. If it doesn't go at a 30, it's going to go at a 40. If that doesn't work, it just gets lower. Just think of a garage sale at the end of the day of the last day, and there's still stuff there. You want a markdown? You just say, you know, I won't pay that, but I'll pay you half of it if you throw in these other six items that I like for free. And
I got to have those potholders. Yeah.
So that's right. Well,
then you're good to go.
I was thinking of the specialty glasses. Yeah. You know, nobody's bought them because they're out of style, but I happen to have some that just like them back in my own China closet. So I'll take them off your hands if you throw them in with this other junk I'm going to buy. And that's what's going to happen here over the next couple of months, as warehouses are going to get emptied so they can buy new stuff. There's actually new stuff on the way for Christmas. It has to get in the warehouse and in the stores pretty quickly. So the assumption right now is that next quarter's earnings are going to start showing some lower numbers. And if that happens, then the analysts are going to drop the following quarter, first quarter into next year. And when that happens, values in the stock market have to be adjusted. Now, if the Fed suddenly says, we've got inflation whipped, we know it says it's 8%, but it'll be 2% within 6 months, we're going to quit raising interest rates. Okay, then interest rates come down and valuations are going to be fine. I don't know if you want to make that bet that inflation's going to drop that fast and the Fed is just simply not going to raise rates anymore, given the quotes that I read earlier in this session from Chairman Powell. That he's saying, we all agree.
It doesn't seem that way. And there's plenty of companies out there. In fact, the vast majority, their forward guidance is all being reduced. They're all saying, get ready for a slowdown, because we see it coming, and that's what we see. And when that becomes reflected in the actual earnings number that comes out, if we're still in a high interest rate environment, that's when you can really get the pullback that feels like it should be happening. And right now, the markets are kind of ignoring that kind of news. You know, they always say, don't fight the Fed. If we're going to keep increasing interest rates, that's a time to get very cautious. The market's kind of ignoring that right now, last week anyway. And so we'll see where that goes. But, as far as we're concerned, we think reality is going to set in, and there's going to have to be a pullback here because of, like you said, Don, businesses are going to slow down. I mean, that's what the higher interest rates are for, to make businesses slow down, to make the transactions decrease. And it's likely that that's going to occur.
Well, the Fed cannot do anything about the supply chain, and they can't do anything about the amount of excess inventory, out-of-date inventory, that's in warehouses. The only thing they can do to solve inflation is destroy demand, make things so expensive or conditions so bad that consumers pull in their reins and say, enough. I'm just not going to do anymore. Starting to see that in the housing market with a 30-year mortgage above 6%. That takes a lot of buyers out of the market. And home builders are saying, this is our last project. We're not going to start another one. We're going to cancel our permit processes. We're going to wait because buyers aren't showing up. And if we don't have buyers, we're not going to build more houses. That's just the bottom line. In normal times, no one really questions whether good news is actually good. We just take that for granted.
Right.
But right now, demand and supply or inventory are grossly misaligned. We've had supply significantly lagging demand. We've had inflation at the highest levels in decades, and the Federal Reserve has been forced to tighten monetary policy, and they did everything they could by renaming it transitory. Well, this is kind of Orwellian. No, that up is down. No, that front is back. good as bad. Really? Right. I mean, I need to go back to school. I don't understand these new definitions. And Mr. Fauci was on TV recently saying, I never said we should close down the schools. I said, really? You know, let's go back and look at a few clips from a few years ago.
Go to the tape. Yeah.
So you get bad news and the stock rallies. You say, why are people thinking that way? Well, we don't know. How about that? We don't know.
No. But the stock market is made up of human beings, and humans can make decisions that aren't necessarily rational. And in that can affect things in the market in the shorter term. Medium term and longer term, usually the economics win out. So that it's like it's probably going to come around to Chairman Powell's point of view. We probably are going to have a slowdown. Last week, no sign of it. So we'll see when and if that actually turns.
So back in June, Chairman Powell all but confirmed that he was hoping for a bear market. He said, quote, this is in June. Over the course of the year, financial markets have responded, i.e. dropped like a rock, and have generally shown that they understand the path we're laying out. And then just more recently, the Minneapolis president of the Minneapolis Fed, Kashkari, got that right? In an interview, he said he was, quote, happy to see stock prices fall after Powell's hawkish speech at the end of Jackson Hole. So the Fed is saying, hey, down is good. Okay, that's not what investors are looking for. They apparently got fed up and said, enough's enough this last week. But then unemployment rises, and a rising unemployment rate suggests we're getting some slack in an unusually tight labor market. We need higher unemployment, but the economy's strong when everybody's got a job and plenty of income. Well,
got a headache.
It's backwards.
Yet?
Yeah. Manufacturing cools. Well, that has allowed a drop in commodity prices, particularly in aluminum. Copper, another leading indicator, has fallen. Oil's down. A lot of, and you're normally saying, if things are going to slow, these things make sense, but we're not really looking for a slowing economy. We want growth. Register for our webinar at iriradio.com. We are out of time. God bless you, and God bless your family, and God bless America.